It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry. And also my great pleasure to welcome on the phone Emily Forstner. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I thought since this is the time leading up, the last Valley Edition before we have the general election, the last in the series of elections for this year, that'll be happening on Tuesday, on November 6th, that we would take a look at kind of the state of the campaigns, things that we have observed, because we overlap in the circles we are involved in, but we see from different perspectives where we live and what we see and listen to. Maybe I'd kick off with this. Last night, we're doing this on Friday. Last night on Thursday was the last debate, and it involved two of the three candidates for governor. It involved Mike Dunleavy and Mark Begich. Billy Towen was not there. He was not included in that. He is somewhat considered to be a lesser candidate in the sense that he's polling very little, and it looks like he will not necessarily a big player in all of this, unless, of course, we come up with a very close race between the two principals. And then even though he may just have a few votes, maybe even a few thousand votes, that could spell something of a difference. Mm-hmm. Terry, did you have a chance to see part of that debate or any of it?
I did. I watched the whole thing. There hasn't been a lot of opportunities to actually see debates where Mr. Dunleavy was part of the troop. And this was kind of the second one. There was one on KTUU last week, I think, or a couple weeks ago. And then this one, which kind of surprised me. It's getting pretty close to election time. So I think this one was, I think as the ADN put it, sort of the gloves were off on this one a little bit more. I think that particularly from Mr. Begich's standpoint, he was a little more resilient to point out some of the inaccuracies in some of the things that Mr. Dunleavy had talked about and his record, because that's a big difference between these two candidates. Mr. Begich certainly has a record from running the city of Anchorage and 3,000 employees, but he hasn't sat on the state and wasn't here during a lot of what's being talked about right now, and the flaws and the crime and the underfunding and some of the crises. He was in the private sector at that point, or the nonprofit sector. So I think he was a little more resilient in pointing that out, that Mr. Dunleavy was sort of part of the problem and part of that.
I saw most of the debate as well, and I know that they the moderator attempted to keep focus on a series of pertinent topics.
He was a good moderator.
PFD was one, mm-hmm. Certainly, that received a lot of attention. I was curious because Emily has been doing some work looking at healthcare and the positions of candidates coming up to this general election on healthcare. Do you remember what specifically, if anything, was said regarding Medicaid or any of the healthcare issues? Or
they didn't ask him a point that I remember, a point question about Medicaid expansion. I think that one has been very clear from the Begich camp that they agreed with the expansion that Governor Walker put forth, and they he intends to continue the expansion. Mr. Dunleavy's been a little squishier on his answers, saying that he didn't want to take health care away from Alaskans, but that doesn't mean, or it hasn't said to me anyway, that he is absolutely going to support Medicaid, unless somebody else heard something during that debate. I don't remember too much on health care. A lot on crime, a lot on the PFD, not so much on healthcare, which is surprising because it's the number one driver of our budgets.
And Emily, have you noted anything recently, either in the work that you've been doing as you've been looking at these two principal candidates or other information regarding the positions that the two candidates are taking regarding healthcare?
Well, I listened to a radio interview that the former Senator Dunleavy had on the peninsula. I'm trying to find the KSPD, I think it is, the Peninsula Radio. And they asked him about the Medicaid expansion because of its impact on rural Alaska. And he kind of sidestepped it and talked about the expense of it and how he has to keep down the expense. And then he kind of rode a little bit on what Begich is saying, that if we look at how it's managed, we can save a lot of money just within how we do the paperwork and the documentation and things like that with Medicaid. So he didn't say he would get rid of it, but he, you know, it was a population that if he had said that, I think he would have lost a lot of votes. So he was not definitive by any stretch of the imagination. He did say, though, that one of the areas that he would look at cutting budgets would be in the human and social service areas. And when we look at healthcare overall and behavioral health, then human and social services play a big part in that.
Okay.
Yeah, short on specifics, a lot of more generalities here.
Well, let's finish up this debate that we were talking about that happened last night. I took away, here's my takeaway. There were two major issues and points made, and the issues involved PFD and initiative dealing with salmon. And I thought that those two may prove to be the dominant factors that people hear when they're thinking about these two candidates.
Oh, I think you have to throw the PFD in there.
No, I said the PFD.
Oh, okay.
Number one. And what was interesting to me was the statement that Dunleavy made regarding the fact, they both agreed, Begich and Dunleavy agreed, that there was $19 billion in the reserve fund, of the permanent fund. And when pressed on the issue, Dunleavy said, yes, if we were to follow through, and he were able to convince the legislature to not only restore the dividend, but also to make whole those people who would have received the dividend at its fuller amount, that it would take $6 billion. And I almost want to say, blithely said, yeah, that we've got it. We've got $19 billion. We'll just use $6 billion. And when I was looking at that, I said, well, maybe the number six is what seems so small. It's a small number, but billion is a big number. Yeah. And I somehow thought that the response that Begich had, which was to say, you know, you're buying today, you're buying today, giving people a lot of money and so on, and this money would have tremendous impact down the road. Now, I thought that Dunleavy's whole point was, and he repeated it many times, we've heard it in other venues, that people have lost confidence in government, and he was actually going to restore confidence by buying that confidence. Terry?
Yeah, I think that was a really good summary of it. It's just a completely different viewpoint going forward, I think. You know, there has been a tendency of the legislature, and Mr. Dunleavy was part of it. Again, Mr. Begich wasn't down there, of sort of let's live for today, not for tomorrow so much. They've spent our savings. And I think Mr. Begich is true. We have to think about going forward. But today it matters taking that $6 billion out, too, because one of the reasons that Alaska hasn't had their credit rating tank even more than it has is the fact that we've had savings to draw off of, that we've had these big reserves. And even though our budget is out of whack in comparison to our revenues because of the price of oil, and we certainly, that's 95% of our budget, and we have no control over that, the credit agencies could look to what we had in those budget reserves. And by depleting it, I don't even know how you would track down all the people that have moved or lived here or how you would do that. And that's not something Dunleavy can do without the agreement of the legislature to do that payout. They were the ones that did not override the or did not veto the governor cutting it to a more reasonable level anyway. So I think it is a lot of smoking mirrors here, and whether the people of Alaska just hear the PFD and I want that money. That's a lot of money to people. It's become part of our income that we've depended upon, and it's been a substitute for wages for so long. Whether that will win them over, or there are people that say, I want to live here for a long time. I want to make sure that my kids have a PFD, that we're able to pay for government services. That's really the difference in these two candidates.
Well, let's switch over to the initiative, the ballot proposition one, because here the two candidates have staked out very strong different positions. Mr. Dunleavy has said no on one. Mr. Begich has said yes on one. That, once again, is being portrayed by Mr. Dunleavy as a way in which you can encourage job creation and so on, and that if passed, there would be everyone would flee the state of Alaska. Mr. Begich seemed to follow the line that, you know, there were 40,000 people who signed off on this, and that the legislature, Mr. Begich was not in the legislature during the time when it was trying to deal with the issues of making some changes to permitting processes, et cetera. The legislature was not acting, and so an initiative was thrown out there, and the proposition made it. I think the real question is, should it pass? What will be the effect? Should it fail, what will it be the effect? Emily, have you looked at that at all, or heard the varying arguments, pro and con?
Well, I've looked at it, not in depth, and I tell you, I'm kind of torn with it. You know, just personally, for me, it was like, of course, it's for salmon. And then I'm reading the opposition very carefully, and I've watched a couple of debates, and I'm thinking, you know, there might be more to this than meets the eye. But in terms of the two candidates, I don't see this as a breaking point. I think people are going to be voting on that proposition on their own personal investment and what they know about it. I don't think it's linked to the candidates. How the candidates deal with it once one of them makes it into office, I think is very important. Mm-hmm. What's striking to me, Dunleavy's got a couple, I'm going to call them sound bites, right? I've listened to the few debates that he's been in and the radios, and he keeps coming back to trust. He wants to rebuild trust, and he wants to bring back the PFD, and he's going to balance his budget. But he never talks about working across the aisle. And we're not going to rebuild trust in our government unless people see us working together. Even going backwards in time and repaying back the PFD doesn't build trust. In fact, it erodes trust. It means that we can undo what an elected official did prior to. So it's divisive and it's eroding. Now, the same thing with the salmon proposition. What I fear is that if Proposition 1 passes in the favorable position, yes on salmon, Dunleavy, if he's governor, he's not going to respect it because that's not what he would have done. So that's kind of where I didn't answer your question, Mike, on what do I know about the two propositions, but I do worry about how the two different candidates would honor the people's vote.
Well, maybe it's time now to throw in this other factor, which the big shadow that's over.
And I took a long time to get to that point.
Right now. But you did it well. You did it well. The shadow feature, though, here, and I reviewed earlier today the reality of money. And there is no doubt that we're coming to the most expensive combination of money spent on a proposition and a gubernatorial race that we've probably ever seen. People are talking about figures like $14 million. And the interesting part is that this is an uneven spending. It could be suggested that Senator Begich has managed to do quite well in fundraising. He's raised what in normal times might be considered a substantial amount of money. But it pales by comparison to the millions of dollars that have been raised once again by independent PACs that have been using the money to provide what appears to be mostly ads of all sorts. This is for both of those campaigns. Both the gubernatorial campaign and the Proposition 1 campaign have seen an outsized expenditure on one side, one for Dunleavy and, of course, one for one. And that brings up the real question of whether the money in this case is going to take what might have been a horse race and make it less of a horse race. And that's something what will be playing out, of course, as we get to Tuesday. I'd also like to not just speak about the proposition and the gubernatorial race, but turn our attention to the other arguably big race, and that is Elise Galvin and Don Young. There was a press release that just came out from the Galvin campaign saying that they were tied with Mr. Young, that we had Ivan Moore's most recent poll, and pointing to it as something of an independent poll, showed that she had closed the gap finally. She's been, if you looked out at Nate Silver's 538 references to gubernatorial races around the country, she's been 45.7 to 49.7 roughly as a vote percentage for a long time. So if indeed this is accurate, then it would appear that she has continued to close the gap. Terry, comments?
Well, speaking of funding, there's a big difference in those candidates, too. Elise Galvin has not taking money from PACs and has raised an enormous amount of money, more than, I think, fair to say, anybody who has taken on Don Young at this point has been able to gather in small contributions. And she's also done an enormous amount of outreach to the Bush, to Southeast, around here. And that's something different that because Congressman Young has been there for 45 years, he hasn't really had to do that much. So total difference in those campaigns. You know, polling is polling. We saw at the end of the 2016 race wasn't so accurate. The pollsters were kind of caught embarrassed, I think, at that point, and may have refined their methods more to that. But there is a lot of early voting that's going on. So I think it's completely what it was going to be for weeks, regardless of the polling, and that's who shows up. What candidate motivates people? Will this new combination of just Dunleavy, not a three-way race where people were so discouraged at this point, will that drive more votes out for Elise Galvin to show for her voters to show up? It's just going to be amazing to watch next Tuesday.
So we talked about...
It is, but I saw this morning that Elise Galvin was 1 point ahead of Don Young.
Ah, okay.
So that...
Within the
error is the error. I think the error is 4 points or something. You know,
so within the margin of error, as people like to say. Well, let's.
But don't you think, with Elise Galvin taking so much contributions, $25, $50, no big PAC money, mm-hmm. that she stands a chance of getting more people to the ballot box, because Don Young has 47% of his campaign money coming.
I would agree
the way she gathered her money might mm-hmm. count as votes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's do this, though. We talked about themes that were dominating, perhaps, in the Senate, in the gubernatorial race. What about in this race? Are the themes the same, or are they different? Elise Galvin, Don Young. What's Don Young saying? What's his message? What's Elise Galvin's message?
Oh, yeah, I think Don Young's is the same every year. I'm your guy. I've been there forever. I have a history of working for the state of Alaska, and even though, you know, I'm advanced in years, I'm ready to continue to go on. I've got, you know, all the relationship, no reason to change horses now. I think that's kind of his mantra. I think Galvin is completely the opposite. Time for new fresh eyes. 45 years is long enough. Don Young is not related to his constituents anymore. He voted against, your health care. I want to vote for your health care. He's part of the leadership that has talked about taking away your Social Security and your Medicare. I'm going to protect those things. Their messages could not be any different, I don't think.
Emily, comments?
Yeah, I would like to echo what Terry said, is that Representative Young, he's not speaking in specifics at all. He speaks real straight talk. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm only here working for you, but he's not telling us what he's what actually he's working on. And when I'm going to go back to this idea that 47% of his money is coming from outside corporations, I'm not even really sure he's working for me anymore. Elise has been very pointed. We know she's an advocate for more of a universal health care. We know she's an advocate for keeping Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. We know she's an advocate for public schools with her grassroots work with Great Alaska Schools. So I know where she stands, and I know from how she's collected money who she's working for. And that's kind of the way I read those two campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I'm fascinated. She's come closer to him in the polls than anybody else has ever done.
Yeah, she's worked really hard. She has a really very organized campaign. She started early. She has name recognition. She certainly has a base of trust behind her. There could be some argument for the fact that it is somewhat of the year of the woman, or they have said that. Whether it'll catch on in our state or not, yet to be seen. But there could certainly not be anybody to argue that she's worked hard.
So
I think her campaign team is 700 people.
Her volunteer team, yeah.
So let's look at two other factors in the time we have left. One of them is the national wave, whether it's Me Too or what appears to be a very powerful surge in Democratic candidates around the country, or for that matter, the president's presence, either for or against, is a negativity or a positivity in this whole thing. Here in Alaska, way up in the north, what of those factors do you think most would have some effect on these races we've been talking about? Emily, how about you first?
The national scene with our races here.
Yes.
You know, I think the presence of women is going to have that's where we can connect the dots. That's where we're going to connect the dots. In the gubernatorial, there are some dots that Dunleavy's big on budget, cut. I think that echoes what the Senate and the House has done in D.C., where they worry about the dollars and whatever they can do to make it look like they made cuts. But when I think of Elise versus Don Young, I think it's women, the ascent of women. And when I look at Eileen Patterson and Delaina Johnson, I'm still seeing this surge of a strong woman and women taking charge and going forward. The other things that are involved, you know, like immigration, Don Young brought that up. And that's not hitting Alaska very closely. So some of those other things, not so much.
Okay.
What do you think, Terry?
Yeah, I do think you're right on with the themes. You know, I'm You know, I think that there's a lot of people when it comes to voting that have great intentions. I'm really curious to see what the younger vote does and how they turn out, because I think that in some areas, I think every part of the country is so much different. And I think in some areas, the minorities have a huge effect whether they can actually get out or not. I think you're going to see that, you know, in Texas and in the South a lot. But there's really high hopes for the millennials this time around. The baby boomers are usually very much to be are depended on during the midterms, and there's been a lot of more push to get them out. But there's some really high hopes for the millennials, and they're a lot more accepting, it would seem, to fresh new faces and to women holding roles of power. And so I think that will be really something to watch is, and we do have a pretty robust young population here. A lot will just come down to who voted early and what the weather is next Tuesday, and whether the candidates can do that extra push to get people out to vote. And that's really where it's going to come down to. And it's, I think you're going to see some amazingly close races across the country. I think we're going to have a lot that you may not, we not, know about on Tuesday. Even as much as we think it's going to be over, I think it's going to go days beyond Tuesday in some of these areas that are so very, very close. And I think there'll be some surprises.
Okay, well, let me ask then this panel, for your prediction about one thing, the turnout. Mm. Not who wins or loses, but what do you think, give a percentage of the turnout that you think will, when it's all said and done, will have happened. Is this going to be higher than normal, average, lower than average? Let's start with Emily.
Well, right now, the early turnout is looking like it's going to be nationwide. And Terry's right. The 24 to the 32 range, those they're going out to vote right now for this midterm in alarming numbers, like a lot. But they're predicting that the turnout's going to be closer to a presidential election, which is over 50%. And I think Alaska's going to follow through.
Okay.
I think we're going to be over 50% at the polls.
Terry?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, with this ballot initiative, there's a lot of people invested. Ballot initiatives really changed the scope of elections. And so I'm hopeful that it's going to be pretty high, too. If you look at the early votes, even in Alaska, they're pretty high. So unless just things go really wacko in the next few days and we have a terrible weather day, I'm hopeful we're going to have a pretty decent turnout here. I don't think it's going to be as high in states that have a mail-in ballot, like Oregon and Washington and Colorado. I think those will be off the scale, and they've got some tight races in those areas. But I think Alaska will show up better than normal.
Okay, I'll throw in and say, being the optimistic guy I am, we'll see a total vote here in the state over 60%. Okay. And with that, thank you very much, panel. I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming into the studio today. Thank you, Terry.
Get out and vote.
And I want to thank Emily Forstner for calling in and sharing, too. Thank you, Emily.
No problem. Thank you for the invitation.
All right. So we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.